Psalm 23, if you want to turn to it with me, is one of the most well-known passages in the whole of the Bible. It's one of the most ruined passages in the whole of the Bible because for many people, it's what they hear ministers read out in the crematorium. And so part of today that I would like is for it to be rescued from the crematorium and put back into the Bible and into our own lives. It's an incredibly powerful passage. And it's one which, when we see it afresh, as the Spirit gives us eyes to see and ears to hear, speaks to our hearts like just about nothing else. And so what I want to say is that Psalm 23 has to be felt. It has to be understood. There are the black bits on the white background. And it is what is written that has to be felt. So there's no kind of false either or between understanding and feeling. But we don't really understand it until we feel it. So we're going to read Psalm 23, and I'll be using NIV. And then what I want to do is to just look at what's in Psalm 23. And I don't think I do this, make all the points in a sermon begin with the same letter. But the points to do with Psalm 23 all begin with the letter P. So, you know, there you go. I know it's cheesy, but I mean, you remember good cheese, don't you? Like at 3 o'clock in the morning, you remember. Oh man! So it might help us to remember. We might have a little bit of fun with those four peas in a pod. Oh dear, it's time to retire. But then, what I want to do is to see how we get from Psalm 23 to Jesus being the Good Shepherd. And there are just other passages in there that help us to make that bridge. And I want to do that so that you can see that it's really in the Bible and not just, you know, a flight of fancy kind of thing or a nice point to make or, you know, the sort of typical thing a preacher would say. So I want to track it through and then hopefully we can really begin to feel how wonderful God is towards us because of how wonderful he is in himself. So let's read Psalm 23 and then I'll say a little bit about that. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So, Psalm 23 was written by a king. Wouldn't it just be amazing if we ever had a king who would sit down and write something like Psalm 23? The queen is a lovely Christian woman. I have no doubts whatsoever about the depth of her Christian conviction. And when the queen says it's Christmas, everyone starts singing carols. And I think we underestimate the influence that we've had upon the United Kingdom by having a Christian monarch. Well, David was a king. And he had once, of course, been a shepherd. He had been one kind of shepherd for one kind of sheep. But now he is another kind of shepherd as a king for another kind of sheep. In Psalm 78, David is described in this way, or God is described in this way, in God's actions. He chose David his servant and took him from the sheep pens. From tending the sheep, he brought him to be the shepherd of his people, Jacob, of Israel, his inheritance. And David shepherded them with integrity of heart, with skillful hands. He led them. So, shepherd equals king. And so, the king is saying, I've got a king. I rule over all these people. My kingdom has been expanding. Moab is my washpot. Over Edom, I toss my sandal, as we all do. Philistines, you know, 1,000 dead before breakfast, kind of thing. I reign over this huge kingdom. I have the power of life and death. Anything within this kingdom is mine. But I have a king. And my king is Yahweh. So David is, according to Psalm 78, and those last two or three verses in Psalm 78, from verse 70 onwards, David is God's under-shepherd. David is the shepherd looking after God's sheep. David is the king over those whom God reigns over. So he is, as we were thinking of a couple of weeks ago, so he is God's vice regent on earth. And he exercises that vice regency by reigning over God's people in exactly the same way that God reigns over them and over him. So that everything that he is to be to the people is a reflection on earth of how God in heaven is towards David and towards all the rest of his people, because they're his sheep. So I've got a king, and he's king over all of us, is the kind of the logic of it all. So David has to be like the king who has chosen him and taken him from the sheep pens and put him on the throne. So this shepherd king has a king himself, the true and perfect model shepherd. Now, if we sort of just to introduce a little bit of vocab here, if we go back to Genesis chapter 1 and we read God making everything, and at the end of every day he said, and it was good. And at the end of day 6, when he's made man, it was very good. Now, that, to get the flavor of that word good in the Hebrew, you sort of think, well, it's just absolutely, it's just, I don't think we have an English word that does that other than So, it's just so. It is just absolutely as it should be. I can't think of a word. I'm just going to go all the way through monosyllabic grunts. So that's the flavor of the word good in Hebrew. And so when we say that God is the perfect, absolutely spot on, just so king, the way of saying that in Hebrew would be to say he is the good king. He's just perfect. Like, you wouldn't want to change it. You know, it's like taking notes out of a Mozart concerto. You wouldn't do that. I mean, they're all needed, you know? And it's just perfect. So David models his kingship on God, who is the perfect king, the good king. So, let's start landing the plane. What kind of shepherd is God in Psalm 23? What kind of king is God? Who is your shepherd. What's he like? Well, here come the four peas in the pod. First of all, Yahweh is your provider. You may be familiar with what Paul writes in Philippians about Jehovah Jireh, or Jehovah Yireh, or whatever, Yahweh Yireh. Again, start sounding all Hebrew-y. My provider. So the Lord is my shepherd, therefore I shall not be in want. He is my provider. What does he provide? He provides good and safe pasture. The idea of a green pasture is that it's really tasty, as I'm sure we all know, and lying down means that you feel really, really safe. So you're in a place where you are safe and you've got all that you need, and it's just a really good place to be. And he provides these quiet waters, or literally waters of quietness, waters of tranquility. If you're ever in, you know, sort of some lovely green glade, and there's a stream there, or a little river or something, a bickering burny, if you are Scottish, I was trying to be contextualized, but it just doesn't work, does it? Then you'll know that just the sound of the water actually adds peacefulness. It's a weird thing. So he provides, and he provides restoration for your soul. Who needs to be able to lie down in green pastures except those who are vulnerable? I mean, safety doesn't mean much until you feel vulnerable, does it? And then you understand safety. Who needs green pastures except those who are starving? Who needs quiet waters? Who's going to celebrate quiet waters more than those whose lives are chaotic noise and distress? And who's going to celebrate the restoration of their soul if it's not those who know their souls have been broken and that they themselves have done a lot of that breaking? So he is a provider, and he provides protection for us. So he is also our protector. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. So the rod is the thing that is like the shepherd's crook, as we normally think of it. It's a fairly light stick and longish, so that you can tap the back of sheep that are in front of you so they go that way, not that way, and that kind of thing. And you can use it to guide and help the sheep. The staff is the knokbery, or the cudgel or whatever, and you use the staff not on the sheep, because you're looking after them, but you use your staff on the wolf that's coming and you whack it over the head and you kill it. Then you eat it or something, I don't know what. So there's protection there. But of course, a staff and a rod are no use whatsoever unless they're in the hands of somebody who is right with you when the wolf comes. But this protection extends beyond circumstances that might prevail against us. It extends towards something that we feel deeply. Even though I walk through, well, valley of the shadow of death, there's no word in the Hebrew for death, it's just the valley of the shadow, that got added in, and it's become kind of our folklore, which is why it gets read out in the crematorium so frequently, or possibly used to. It's just the darkest place you can be. And a valley is low. And who would celebrate God being with you in the valley of the shadow, the darkest place, unless, of course, that's where you are or where you've been. And we all, I'm sure, we know of many in the fellowship have been in some pretty dark places and low places. And there are times when you just feel completely hemmed in and there is no light, you cannot see a way forward. It is bleak. It's horrible. But you're not alone. Not just because there are other Christians who are listening to you and maybe communicating with you, but they aren't feeling what you feel. They'll have their own recollections, perhaps, but nobody else can feel what you are feeling. Except God. God who feels what we feel, who is in the place that we are in. Because all the rest of fellowship will be in their own dark places and valleys, or else might not be, and are watching us and listening to us in ours. But the King is with you in it, feeling what you feel, understanding you from the inside. Provider and protector. And of course, therefore, he is, third P coming up, present with you. And one of the wonderful things about this psalm is that it is this glorious testimony to the fact that wherever David goes, whatever he does, God is with him. So, where are you going to go next today? Coffee queue. He's even with you in the coffee queue. Particularly when you get to the line at the front of the line and there's none left. And as you feel yourself cast into outer darkness of a caffeine denuded life, you know, sorry. Where are you going then? You're going home? He is with you in the car, driving along the road. Get out of the car, go into your door. He's with you. Where are you going next? Kintore? He's with you, driving along the road. All the things that are going on in your head. The low, dark stuff coming back into your head when you're driving. All the stuff that when you're driving on your own could overwhelm you and just make you do that with the steering wheel. All the stuff that makes you think, can I actually go on? Is there anything ahead? Would everyone else be better off without me? He's there with you. Not just in the passenger seat, but right with you. He is present. And then the fourth, he prepares you. Even as he takes you through the valley of the shadow, he prepares you. He prepares a table for you, which is part of his provision, of course. But in verse 6, surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So Jesus, in John 14, says to the disciples, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and take you to be with me so that where I am, you might be also. So he's preparing you. He provide abundantly for you in the face of your enemies so that you can go bleh like that to your enemies. Martin Luther had a more frank and sort of bottomy kind of version of that, as he taught his children. I can say this here. There are some churches where I couldn't say this, but Martin Luther taught his kids to say, well, when the devil comes at you, just show him your bottom, which kind of sums up German theology for us, basically. Not one for the children's address, I think. But he's preparing you. And he's preparing you for God's house. It's a wonderful thing that Yahweh, David only uses Yahweh at the beginning and at the end. It's kind of a bookend, top and tail. At the beginning, he is guiding your journey. He's with you on the journey. He's going through everything with you on the journey. He's giving you all you need. He's protecting you on the journey. He's a shepherd. He's leading you. He's leading you. And at the end, when he comes, when the name comes in again, he gets you home. He will get you home. So this is God for you. What's the operative word? Sometimes when we're reading a passage, it's helpful for us to just to say, well, what's the most repeated word? Because usually that's what it's about. It's not complicated, you know? That's what it's about. That's one of the key things to get in the passage. Well, the key words, the repeated words of this are he and me, or my, or I. So we have singular, first person, personal pronouns, and God. So one of the things not to do with this psalm is to say, well, yes, that's a fantastic theological treatise on God and on humanity. That would be not to understand the black bits on the white background, because the words are me. So this isn't an abstract treatise on God. Nor is this something which is just a general truth about God for everybody. This is something about you. Each of you. Every single one of you. This, you've got to take this personally, because that's how it's written. So I'm looking at you. This is for you, and for you, and for you, and for you. It's for you. It is for you. That's what you've got to do with it, because that's what it says. We have, some of us, I don't know if it's particularly a bloke thing, we have something we've learned throughout our lives, and very often some of our Christian circles have taught this to us, we objectify everything. We say, oh, it's not about me, it's about everybody, you know. And partly it's a reaction to narcissism, where everything's about me. Partly it's a reaction to other forms of sin, where we put ourselves in the center of the universe and God has to revolve around us. So we react against that. Or actually, sometimes we objectify it because we're scared of feeling it. Or we think we might become self-centered if we say it. But it is simple, straightforward obedience to the text to extract from this as much personal comfort as you can. God has given himself to you. Not just to the fellowship, you collectively, but to each of you distributively. He has given himself to be known by you in a way that you can say, I am his and he is mine. Which is astonishing, isn't it? And wonderful. Everything that God is in himself, he is for you. Is God kind? He is kind for you. Is God patient? He is patient with you. Is God merciful? He is merciful with you, for you, to you. And David felt it. You don't write poetry without feeling it. So, David, who is God's king, reigned and wanted to reign in the way that God reigned over him. God shepherded him. And God made a promise to David in 2 Samuel chapter 7 that God would not only bless David and his line going down, his descendants, but God, from that line, would put somebody on the throne over his kingdom who would reign forever. So there would be a shepherd coming, there would be a king coming who would reign in this way, but would do so forever and ever and ever, would never stop reigning, would never stop ruling. And that king was promised again and again by the prophets, promised in Jeremiah 23, promised in Ezekiel 34 repeatedly, promised in Micah. Let me just read to you from Micah chapter 5. But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you, where David had come from, Bethlehem, where this one's going to come from, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times, which is a way of saying in Hebrew, you'll never be able to go back far enough to find out when he came from. Not where, but when he came from. So this sort of ancient, eternally ancient king will actually pop up from Bethlehem. Or does he pop out, I suppose, in Bethlehem. So he's going to be eternal, and he's going to be a man. And he will stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they will live securely, for then his greatness will reach to the ends of the earth, and he will be their peace. This perfect, just so, good shepherd. Couldn't be better. Will come from Bethlehem. And so lo and behold, in John 10, Jesus stands up and says, I am the good shepherd. It would have sounded slightly different in the Aramaic, but not so different as to have been unrecognizable as Yahweh, good shepherd. So Jesus is your shepherd king. Now here's the amazing thing. Jesus is your shepherd king. In just the same way, provider, protector, present with you, preparing you for a better place, who understands you from the inside, instantly, intuitively, instinctively, totally, who understands you better than you understand yourself, who is there before you are, because he has already been through everything that the psalmist needed and that you need. Remember, Jesus would have sung Psalm 23. Jesus would have been able to write Psalm 23 from memory, along with all the rest of it. Hear these words of Psalm 23 on Jesus' lips. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Hear Jesus saying, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow, you are with me. Hear Jesus saying, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my foes. Hear Jesus saying, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And you think, wow. So he knows. He knows it from the inside. He understands you when nobody else can. He understands you when you can't put it into words, because he's been there. He understands rejection. He understands unfairness. He understands daylight robbery. He understands hunger. He understands loss. He understands fear, sweat, great drops of blood at the thought of the cup that was coming round to him. He understands tiredness, being so bone weary that you fall asleep in a boat in the middle of a storm and have to be woken up. So this is Psalm 23, a psalm for a king, a psalm for the king, and a psalm for all the king's people. God is the perfect shepherd king. He promises to shepherd his people this way in Psalm 23 forever. He is your shepherd king, now and forever. So just in the last moment, let's make the last moment one that we each spend before God, rather than me talking. In the last moment of this sermon, just tell him how you are and how you feel, and tell him how wonderful you think he is, and just say thank you to him for being with you in it. And make it really, really personal. He is not the good shepherd. He is my good shepherd. He is your good shepherd. And if you need to practice saying that, because you don't usually, then now would be a good time. So I'll just go back to my seat, and there'll be a moment or two of quiet, and then whoever's doing whatever next will do it.